Coming up now on Monitor, Meet the Press, the prize-winning interview program produced by Lawrence Spivak. Ready for the unrehearsed conference are Jack Bell of the Associated Press, Richard Wilson, Kohl's Publications, Richard Harkness, NBC News, and Lawrence E. Spivak. Members of the distinguished panel of newsmen will talk with Senator Hubert Humphrey, Democratic Whip of the U.S. Senate from the state of Minnesota. Here is the moderator of Meet the Press, Ned Brooks.
We are indebted to Senator Humphrey for substituting on short notice for the Secretary of Agriculture, Mr. Freeman, who is ill. Senator Humphrey has worked closely with Secretary Freeman in formulating the administration's farm program, which recently was submitted to Congress. For 8 years, he has been a member of the Senate Agriculture Committee. He serves also on the Foreign Relations Committee and the Appropriations Committee, and he is the assistant Democratic leader of the Senate with the title of Whip, responsible for rounding up the votes on the administration program. Senator Humphrey is one of the originators of the Food for Peace program, and he is the sponsor of legislation to establish the Peace Corps. Now we're ready for questions, Mr. Spivak.
Senator Humphrey, the congressional record of March 10th quotes you as saying this: "I have become skeptical of what we call the rigid control program. I make this statement frankly because in my earlier days in the Senate, I argued vigorously for the most rigid type of controls." In view of that statement, do you wholeheartedly support the president's program on farms?
Yes, I support the president's program, Mr. Spivak, the aims of the program and the broad basic outline. Of course, as you know, the legislation has not as yet been presented on the new farm bill. My observation was directed towards what I considered to be the mandatory high price support level that left no flexibility at all. And I think that a man, as he goes along, finds that there may be some improvements over what he originally thought to be the better.
Well, doesn't this program envision controls over the farmer and over what he does with his land that can hardly be matched this side of the Iron Curtain?
No, Mr. Spivak, of course, it's very difficult to discuss the administration's farm program unless we had the time to outline its broad features. But let me say that one of its features is the free cooperative working relationship between the producer group of a commodity and the technicians in the Department of Agriculture working together to produce a farm program that meets the needs of the farmer. When two-thirds of the producers of a commodity support that program. In other words, we're not going to foist on the farmer any program at all. We're going to ask Mr. Farmer to work with the government to help design a program. And then if the farmers themselves, by a two-thirds majority, vote for the program, and if Congress does not overrule it, then it becomes the active program of the government.
And once the farmer votes that way, isn't he going to get his orders from Washington on what crops to plant, almost right down to how many seeds he can put in the ground?
Not at all. As a matter of fact, it'll be to the contrary. Washington will get its orders from the farmers. This will be a farmer-run, farmer-operated program that Mr. Kennedy has in mind. Our president has laid before the country a complete reversal of what was the traditional farm policy. We are now working on the basis of farmer groups, commodity groups, working together with the Department of Agriculture to design programs that are specifically related to a particular commodity. And then the farmers themselves will administer those programs through their elected county committees. I think it's a rather democratic situation.
Senator, when the president was running for the presidency, he himself, it was quoted as saying at one time, that any attempt to control one commodity and not another is predoomed. Our farm economy, he said, cannot survive half controlled and half free. Now, are you saying that the farmer is going to be freed altogether now?
What I'm saying is that each commodity group, when a commodity is in surplus or in danger of going into surplus, will have its own negotiating committee, its own advisory committee, that will work with the Secretary of Agriculture and the department technicians to design a program. That program will then be placed before every producer of that commodity. if two-thirds of the producers of the commodity vote for it in a national referendum, it will become the law. If they do not, it will not become the law. And if it becomes the law, it will be administered by the elected farm committees of the farmers themselves. And I submit that this is a far cry from regimentation. It is truly representative government, and it comes from the grassroots up rather than from the White House down.
And are you saying there will not be rigid controls, regardless of who administers them?
There will be the controls that the farmers themselves vote for, design for themselves, and feel are the most applicable to the particular commodity. Some may be rigid, some may not be. It will depend upon the nature of the commodity and the problem that faces that particular group.
Mr. Harkness.
Senator, President Kennedy's had 2 months working with this Democratic Congress of yours. So far, you've passed 3 bills. You've extended unemployment compensation. I'm talking major bills. Extended
yes.
unemployment compensation, the feed grain bill, and you've given the 5 stars back to General Eisenhower. Well, why so much talk and so little action?
Well, Mr. Harkness, we've also passed the depressed areas bill. It's
not,
still in
not
conference.
Finally.
It's in conference, but both houses have passed it. And it won't be long. It'll be within the next week or 10 days that this matter will have been ironed out in conference and adopted. So it's just a matter of the calendar. Mr. Harkness, your question surely is one that many people have asked, I know, because I get mail alike along that line. In setting up a new administration, it is a time-consuming enterprise. There isn't any doubt about it. Also, we've had in the Senate many confirmations of presidential nominations that have had to be confirmed. Hearings have had to be held on these men. This was priority business. The House went through the rules fight. This took time, and it took time to organize the House committees. Frankly, the Congress has had a slow start, but it's moving along and moving along well. And I predict that by the time that the summer comes around, we'll have a very creditable record.
Senator, the other day at the White House, you were there at the regular legislative session, I think. After the talk with President Kennedy, the Senate Democratic leader, Mr. Mansfield, said, Mr. Kennedy's honeymoon with Congress is over. Now, what did he mean?
Well, I don't know. If the honeymoon is over, may I say that it's maybe settled down to some very happy and pleasant living together then, because we're still doing well. It isn't always that the great emotion and the happiness of a honeymoon continues on into years and years of pleasant living. But I think that we're getting along fairly well. Of course, we've had some difficulties, as we did in the House on one bill, but these are to be expected, these difficulties. I hope we have some difficulties. I don't want a rubber stamp Congress, and I don't want an executive that tells us exactly what to do. The processes of democratic government...
You wouldn't be Hubert Humphrey if you did.
Thank you, sir.
One question right on that line, Senator. Do the new frontiersmen or do the Southern Democrats and Republicans control your Congress?
I would say that the Kennedy program will have a very favorable reception in Congress, and if this means that new frontiersmen are in charge, we'll settle for that definition.
Mr. Bell.
Well, Senator, a man who's in a position to know tells me that he doesn't believe Congress will pass any medical care for the aged this year. Now, you go to the White House every week, and you're close to the president. Is there any disposition on the part of the administration to put this off until next year, which happens to be an election year?
No, sir. I'm hopeful that we'll pass medical care for the aged. I have been told that it would be difficult to do this in the House, that is, to initiate it in the House. And if that is the case, then we'll initiate it in the Senate as an amendment to one of the Social Security bills. There has been no discussion, Mr. Bell, as to a delay of the medical care to the aged. I consider this one of the priority items of legislation.
This is not then an administration delay. If there is a delay, it will be an anti-administration delay brought about by the coalition against you.
I would say that if there's a delay, it will be because of the concerted attack upon the Social Security medical care program, which has come from certain quarters in this country, plus the conservative coalition that would like to delay. But delay does not mean the death of the program. nor does it mean that it will be delayed unduly. We will pass Social Security medical care.
And it is my
feeling that we will pass it in this session of Congress.
Well, Senator, you say you put it on in the Senate. That's going around Robin Hood's barn, as you very well know. Do you think the House will accept anything that you put on in the Senate? They never do.
Oh, well, now, you, Mr. Bell.
Not on a bill of that kind,
I wouldn't mind,
Senator,
if you said this privately, but this is a rather large audience. Don't make the Senate feel so helpless. There are times that the Senate does get its way in a conference with the House. And I feel that we have a better opportunity in the Senate of initiating this legislation than in the House, because there may be problems in the House committee. And if that is the case, then we ought to do it in the Senate and then go to conference. And I believe that in a conference we will be able to get Social Security medical care.
Mr. Wilson.
Senator Humphrey, some people here are saying that President Kennedy has engaged largely in extending the Eisenhower programs, that he has not actually broken with the basic Eisenhower philosophy yet. An analysis was published here of this last week by one of President Kennedy's close friends. How can a left-wing Democrat go along with the Eisenhower record in the way Kennedy is putting it into effect?
Well, I don't know about any left-wing Democrats. I haven't met many of those. But I know that those Democrats like myself that support President Kennedy's program and the Democratic platform find this program considerably different than that of the previous administration. When I say different, I mean in degree. We always have a continuity of basic philosophy in this country, and I hope that we will continue to do so. For example, the Kennedy program referenced to care for the aged, medical care. This is surely not the Eisenhower program. This is the Social Security approach as compared to the Eisenhower charity means test approach. There's a difference on minimum wage. The Kennedy program is the $1.25 an hour. The Eisenhower program was a sort of a lukewarm, almost up to $1.15 an hour. There surely is a vast difference in the agricultural policy of this administration, in the policy on natural resources and conservation. And indeed, there are differences in terms of the overall defense and foreign policy. Those are of differences of degree, and it'll take some time before they're fully developed.
You mentioned the minimum wage. I noticed the House passed the $1.15 minimum wage. I assume the Senate will try to put it up to $1.25. But during the campaign, there was a great deal of emphasis placed on extending the coverage of the minimum wage.
Yes, sir.
Senator Kennedy, campaigning for president, laid emphasis numerous times on bringing the laundry workers into the minimum wage program. And yet, when his program was sent to the Congress, there was no provision in there for extending the coverage that far, nor was it adopted by the House. And it is examples of this kind which cause people to say that the Eisenhower program and the Kennedy program are really not very far apart.
Well, in the instance of minimum wage, they're apart about 4 million workers on coverage, because the Kennedy program calls for an expanded coverage of about 4,300,000. The Kitchen Heirs bill, which was the coalition bill, I think expanded coverage about a little over 1 million, of which only about 300,000 were new workers. In the House on minimum wage, the administration proposal, that is the attempt at passing the administration proposal, failed by one vote. I think it ought to have passed. I regret that it didn't. I want to predict to you, without going out too far on the limb, that we will pass the McNamara bill, introduced as the Kennedy administration bill, for $1.25 an hour, with expanded coverage of over 4 million new workers. And when we come out of conference, I predict we'll have $1.25 an hour.
Not including the laundry workers, however.
Well, now, we may not have the laundry workers, even though I think they're surely entitled to every consideration. They've done good work for us.
The issue is raised also that although certain budgetary increases have been recommended by President Kennedy, that these do not, in fact, go far beyond what President Eisenhower had recommended for this year, the military budget, for example. A relatively modest increase of $650 million in spending compared to recommendations by Democratic critics for increased spending ranging from $2 to $3 billion a year.
Yes, sir.
And yet President Kennedy will not accept that either.
Well, Mr. Wilson, may I say that some of the differences between the Kennedy administration and the Eisenhower administration are pointed up by the temporary unemployment compensation measure, the depressed areas bill, which has just, as I said, been passed by both houses. In the defense field, the new administration has added for the next 3 years approximately $2 billion, giving a shift of emphasis upon the defense structure. Increasing our conventional forces, that is their firepower and mobility, making some changes in air power, and by and large, I think, improving the defense structure. In the meantime, may I say, gentlemen, Mr. McNamara, the new Secretary of Defense, has been ordered by the President to make an exhaustive study of the entire defense establishment and our defense strategy, and you can expect within a year, I am sure, within the next fiscal year, a very substantial modification in the defense structure of this country in light of the studies which are being made.
Whatever became of the missile gap, by the way?
I think it still exists. I regret to say that it does, and I hope that we'll be able to close it. Fortunately, some of the air power that we have does give us a degree of security which is a deterrent factor within itself.
Mr. Spivak.
Senator Humphrey, do you think President Kennedy has made any major accomplishments in the 2 months he's been in office?
Oh, yes, Mr. Spivak.
What would you put your finger on the most important thing you believe he accomplished, what do you think it would be?
He's brought this government into life. There is a new spirit in this city. The government of the United States is on top of the thing, on top of problems again, instead of being just buffeted by them. The government of the United States is responsive again to the needs of our nation. In the area of diplomacy, we find ourselves in closer cooperation and coordination with our allies. We have surely taken a new tack at the United Nations. I believe that Mr. Stevenson's role at the UN is demonstrative of what I mean. He's been a very effective and articulate spokesman. But most of all, there is a spirit of vitality here in the nation's capital. There is a sense of purpose. The American people themselves feel that this government is closer to them and that the man that's in the White House is sharing the problems of this nation with the people.
Most
I think
of
that
it,
you've had a great deal to do with it, you men of radio and press and television.
Thank you, Senator. But most of this has still been in the area of what we call spirit and talk.
That's
what has
very
been
important.
In the spirit of accomplishment? Let me take you, for example, to the question of nuclear test ban. Now, you've
yes.
been interested in that for a long time.
Sir.
The Soviet seems to have lost interest in that altogether now. And we haven't tested for 2.5 years. Aren't we drifting on that just as we did during the Eisenhower administration? How much longer do you think we can wait?
Not at all, Mr. Spivak. The Soviet Union may appear to have lost interest. And it may. One doesn't know. When you're dealing with the Soviet Union, you're dealing with an unpredictable. They parley for position. They may very well deal with you one day at Geneva and another day at Berlin and then cause trouble someplace else as they are in Laos. We have to understand that. And they may want to come to a particular conference and try to make certain agreements at that time and ignore you for months. But here is the difference on the nuclear test ban, insofar as our government is concerned. For the first time, Mr. Spivak, and I speak from knowledge of this, we placed before the Soviet Union at Geneva a total comprehensive draft treaty with our positions clearly spelled out in every area of uncertainty and controversy over the past few years. In other words, we came prepared this time. This was something new.
But the fact
and the administration's position is firm and it is clear. And it has been placed before the world.
But the fact remains that to date nothing has happened and nothing seems likely to happen. How much longer do you think we ought to wait before resuming testing?
I think that we have to wait as long as we find that there's any possibility of a test ban agreement, because a test ban agreement is in our national interest. Now, I was one of those that felt that if the Soviets demonstrated that they had no interest, that they were unwilling to take this conference seriously, that we should resume testing. And the President of the United States has not placed a month or a year on the time or a time limit, but he has said that if we do not have reason to believe that the Soviet is bargaining in good faith, we'll cut off the negotiations and we will or may resume testing.
Mr. Harkness.
Senator, you were just mentioning a moment ago this new Kennedy spirit in the country. Well, what has Congress done since the inauguration to take us to put into action what to me was the highlight of the inaugural address, and that's sacrifice, what can you do for your government? Everything has been what we're doing for you.
Not particularly. We have the only, I would say that in the area of the unemployed, or insofar as our unemployed is concerned, we have tried to be of some help. I don't think enough, but we've done at least something. The administration measures have just come to the Congress. I don't say this in apology or in rationalization. I say it as a matter of some being somewhat of a student of government, with a new president coming in on January the 20th. And here we are just now in the first days of April. It seems to me that you have to expect time to reorganize the government, time to bring your new people into the government, time to re-examine the budget, to present new messages and new proposals. And the Congress has been receiving these. We're already in hearing on the housing program. It takes time to process legislation. We're starting hearings on the agricultural program. We've started hearings on the Social Security program. We're going to start hearings on the tax message just as soon as it comes down to the Congress. And by the time that July rolls around, gentlemen, there'll be a lot to write about, and much of it will be accomplishment.
You just mentioned the housing program. Will you be for a rider to that program to desegregate federally assisted housing?
No, I don't think I would be. I believe that this can be accomplished by executive order, and I doubt that we need to attach a rider such as this. It might only complicate its passage, and it might very well thwart its effectiveness.
I don't mean to be a meanie here, but your Democratic platform, the new Democratic administration will take action to end discrimination in federal housing programs, including federally assisted housing.
Yes, it didn't say by legislative enactment.
I beg your pardon. Yes, it did, I think.
Would you mind reading it again?
Well, I don't have it here. You got me, Matthew.
I believe it just said that we would take action and...
Well, you think it can be done, then?
We know that it can be done. We know that it can be done that way. And when it will be done, or if it will be done,
is
in the hands... I say when it will be done and if it will be done is in the hands of the president.
Gentlemen, we have about 3 minutes. Mr. Bell.
Senator, I just wanted to check something you said a while ago. Unless I heard you wrong, I think that you said that you are not a left-wing Democrat. When did this happen?
On May 27th, 1911, I was born that day.
Well, Mr. Senator,
Bell.
If you're not a left-wing Democrat, name one for me, will
well,
you?
Well, I'm a liberal Democrat and proud of it, and more than that, I'm very happy to be a part of this administration.
But you're not reneging on left-wingism or liberalism, whatever.
Not at all. Liberalism,
I
rejoice in it, Mr. Bell. Thank you.
Mr. Wilson.
Senator, about 64 days elapsed between the time President Eisenhower and President Kennedy had a discussion about Laos.
Yes.
In that period of time, the situation got considerably worse. Then the President of the United States declared that we issued a grave warning that we might resist interference by the use of force in Laos. But about 2 weeks have passed and nothing has happened. In fact, the latest reports are that there is more fighting in Laos today than there was last week. Do you think there is any risk that the United States is being outmaneuvered in this Laos situation?
Well, Mr. Wilson, I'd be the last to say that it wasn't a very serious situation, as it has been so described by men of more importance and more knowledgeable than Senator Humphrey. I don't believe we're going to be outmaneuvered. And the reason I don't believe we're going to be outmaneuvered is because we're aware of that possibility. the Soviet Union's reply to the British request for a ceasefire had some uncertainties in it, and surely some extenuating remarks or ideas. I would suggest, therefore, that we be on guard to make sure that the Soviet Union does not try to stall negotiations at the same time that military buildup takes place and that continued fighting takes place. This is why I believe that Mr. Russ, Secretary Russ's comments following the CETO conference are so important, namely that we will have forces in the area and that we will not tolerate the kind of continued fighting that nibbles off piece by piece the country of Laos in the name of negotiation. That would be the worst travesty on justice.
How much more time is there?
Well, I'm not capable of saying how much more time there is, Mr. Wilson, but I think that our men in the State Department, the President, and our military have a pretty good idea as to whether or not the negotiations would lend themselves to stalling and nibbling. If that were the case, we'd have to take other action.
I think at that point I'll have to interrupt. I'm sorry, but I see that our time is up.
Our thanks to Senator Hubert Humphrey and to the members of the panel, Jack Bell of the Associated Press, Richard Wilson, Kohl's Publications, Richard Harkness, NBC News, and Lawrence E. Spivak. Meet the Press, which this year marks its 16th anniversary on the air, is produced by Lawrence Spivak. We would like to remind you that two unusual news specials will be presented by NBC Radio tomorrow night and Tuesday night. These news specials will consist of highlights from a unique two-day State Department conference at which government leaders will examine major foreign policy matters. Executives and commentators of the broadcasting industry will attend these unprecedented foreign policy briefings. And NBC State Department correspondent Frank Bergholzer will highlight the sessions in a special program each night. Foreign Policy Briefing, Report 1, tomorrow night is expected to present Secretary of State Dean Rusk, together with his special assistant secretaries for Africa, for Russia, for Latin America, for Europe, and for the Far East. Report 2 on Tuesday night will present President Kennedy, Alan Dulles, Director of Central Intelligence, and a number of other top government officials. For the exact broadcast time of these foreign policy briefings, tomorrow night and Tuesday, consult your local NBC station. Frank Shaxfield and the orchestra with Madeline. May we remind you that Monitor is a live program primarily, but some portions are recorded in advance. News comes next over most of these stations.